You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm going to do a solo episode today that's going to cover our Nationals preview, I guess. Alyssa's making me do this, so this should come out actually the week before Nationals, I think. I mean, I'm recording this on October 2nd. Nationals is the 16th, so it should be out a week from now. So I'm going to kind of cover who we have competing, and we did a lot of different things leading up into this competition. Stuff that I haven't done in the past. Usually when we have bigger meets, I kind of stick to what we've always done going into those meets. But lately, you know, I don't have anybody on my team who's going to win a national championship or make a world's roster. So I decided to kind of use this period of time to just try some things. I think that's the benefit of having the group that we have, is we have a good range of beginners to intermediates, some of which are pretty damn strong. And it just gives us a nice, you know, and especially too, having 50 lifters, it just gives a nice sample size of things to try out, see how they work. And if they don't work, go back to the drawing board. Because I think, you know, if we want to make those next strides, we gotta try some things out. We gotta do some things that other people aren't doing to, you know, try to gain an advantage. I think, you know, we get wrapped into comparing ourselves to some of the top lifters, you know, in each weight class, and the majority of those lifters, they live in the gym. They don't have jobs. They, you know, they make lots of sacrifices to be where they are at. And most people don't want to do that or can't do that. Like, I know for me personally, I couldn't just quit my job to start doing an amateur sport that's never going to pay me back. I don't have that luxury, and I don't think any of my lifters have that luxury either. So, you know, we're pretty big on kicking ass outside of the gym as well as inside of the gym and on the platform. So, like, to try to put everything together and to put the best total that you can put out there under those types of circumstances, it gets a little difficult. I think the majority of the information that you see out there, it's not based off of having those outside life stressors and pressures on the lifter. Like, you know, when I was working with Shaco, you know, I'm fortunate enough that I have a job inside of a gym and I can kind of make the free time that I need to do the things that I need to do. But some of the training sessions would take 3 to 4 hours to complete. You know, I'd be squatting and then I'd go bench and then I'd go back to squats and then I'd have some accessory work after. It would take a long time, you know, and it's not even necessarily like the rest periods. And don't get me wrong, like, it became a social event. Like, you know, we'd talk, we'd have fun, like all of those things in between sets. But if, you know, I'm doing 20 top sets at the end of a day, that's not including warm-ups and everything else, it takes some time, you know, like getting your stuff on, changing to bench, putting it back on the squat, like doing all of that stuff took a lot of time. And time is a valuable commodity for most, and most just don't have a lot of it. So trying to find ways to maximize the time in the gym has kind of been at the forefront of what we've been doing for about a year now, I guess, up to this point. So we tried some things going international. So this year, out of those who qualified, we have 8 total that are going. They're all in the open. We have no juniors, no masters, none of that, all open qualifiers. And to be honest, I don't even think I have a junior or a master's lifter on my entire roster. I think we're all open lifters. So some of the things that we, and everybody going into this meet actually kind of did something a little bit different. One of the things that everybody kind of used a little more of this time around is we've been messing around with accommodating resistance a little bit more. So again, back when I was working with Shaco, We did not use bands on squats. We would use chains. And they'd be between 15 and 20 pounds per chain per side, and we'd only use one chain per side. So the accommodating resistance was very small. We would use bands on bench and bands on deadlifts, but they were lighter bands. Again, not adding a whole lot of, you know, on squats, the chains made up about 10% of the total top weight for my squats, and the bands for deadlifts and for bench were even less than that. And we saw good results from doing this, but different reasoning, I think. So this time around, a few months ago, we put bands on the bar, but I didn't see much benefit to them, other than maybe some like little technique things. But the way that we were using the bands, it still wasn't enough. I kind of used the same principle that I was using with the chains with Shaco, just a little bit of band tension, see what it looks like. It really wasn't doing anything. So then I decided to kind of say fuck it. And, you know, weight is weight, but you're just changing the strength curve. If at the top, like for me, if it's 500 pounds at the top, like weight is weight. And I understand that it's changing throughout the lift and the strength curve might be a little bit different, all of those things. But I decided to just say, you know, fuck it, let's do it. So I doubled up minis, which is a little over 100 pounds of band tension. And I was adding straight weight and I was like, this just doesn't feel like enough. Like I feel like I could put the same amount of weight I typically put on the bar and come pretty close to hitting it. So then I decided to take ultras, double them up, put them on the bar. So it made it about a little over 150 pounds of band tension at the top. This time around, I definitely felt the difference with the bands and how it forced me to strain throughout the entire lift. Like you get into with the raw lifts, you kind of explode out of the bottom of the squat and then coast because you got to decelerate the bar towards the top. And I could feel that spot because that's exactly where I would start to coast. That's exactly where the bands would kick in. So it just increased the amount of time I had to strain underneath a given weight. And I actually finished up that wave and squatted on Monday, put more weight on my back than I've ever squatted before. And I mean, it just felt light on my back. The weight was moving fast, and like I had loose knee wraps on, but I had thicker knee wraps on a wave before, and the weights weren't moving as quick as what they were yesterday. So it definitely helped me out quite a bit. But I decided to add this type of training into everyone else's programs. So Dave used quite a bit of weight at the top, I think 150 to 200 pounds of band tension for some wide stance box squats. Terry, we were doubling up the minis, which for her was adding a little over 80 pounds at the top to her squats. So, you know, this would be more like what Westside would call like circa max. Like we were overloading the top and doing this on our max effort days. And we'll adjust. So like we'll use some of this on the speed days too, with less bar weight for recovery, work on some speed and some technique things. But so Dave at the top, I want to say, you know, he was hitting around 600 pounds on those lifts. So at the top, he's locking out about 750 and being forced to strain for quite a period of time, much longer than he would on a typical competition squat. Kerry got up to like 240 plus the 80 pounds, so that's 320. So we're really overloading the top of her best squat, same way as we were with Dave, forcing her to strain. Actually, the first week that she did it, she got stapled with two plates, couldn't even hit that. So, you know, there was a learning curve with it for her. You know, Doug, same thing, overloading at the top around 500 pounds. Emily, we use chains, not bands, but she took 290 plus 40 pounds of chain, so that was about 330 at the top. So the majority of the lifters were using some type of accommodating resistance to really overload the top, increase the strain in the lifts. And the way that we set it up is most had accommodating resistance up through this week. And then I'm running their comp lifts in a 3-week wave where next week they'll take their max effort comp lift. The week after will be a quick little taper week. And then the third week of that wave will actually be the competition. So next week for the singles, we'll kind of get an idea of where they're at, make some calls for our openers and all of that stuff. And then we'll go from there. The thing that I like, so we've started kind of, I mean, God, years ago we worked towards, we were doing way more like Shaco type stuff, but you just run into, and I'm just going to get back to the like time component of it. A lot of, so even like Kerry, so Kerry's been there from the beginning. Kerry got a promotion at work, some much higher level, more stressful job than what she had before. She doesn't have the benefit of having more time to do more in the gym to try to get better at this point. And also like volume, just like what I've noticed over time. So I'm fortunate enough that the majority of my lifters are beginners to intermediates, because I get to fuck around with things and see how things pan out. And like none of them are really lifting enough absolute weights where they're really gonna fuck themselves up. And almost anything will work. So even if it doesn't work to great extent, it's gonna work a little bit. And so it just allows me to like play with things and kind of come up with a good game plan as we get more time under our belts. So, you know, what I've realized is just like volume just ends up beating you up, and you need more recovery to handle higher volumes. Now, the majority of the lifters that start with me are in their 20s, right? They're starting out on careers. They're, you know, they might get married, have families. Like outside stressors are only going to increase. So their ability to recover is actually going to decrease as they get older, not just by like age things that come up, but like life things as well. As you get older, outside stress and pressures increase. So we just don't have the luxury of being able to just keep piling on volumes. Now, the lifters in their early 20s that have no jobs, that live with mom and dad and spend the majority of the time trolling people on the internet or doing a high volume program at RPE6 all the time, they have the luxury where they can recover for those things. So, you know, for us, there's going to be some tweaks that are made. And what I really like about like, and we're moving more towards like a, it's not West Side conjugate. There's a lot of differences between what West Side does and what we do. But we're moving more towards like a conjugate influenced type of program, I would say, where we have max effort days, and then we're doing more at the second half of the week. We're doing more speed days, what I'm calling speed days, but they're a little more, the majority of the lifters that I have used straight weight on these speed days, not accommodating resistance. We've used some of the like Shaco special exercises to work on technique stuff. The number of lifts and the volumes are pretty similar to what I used when we were doing the Shaco stuff. I just put time constraints on it like West Side does. So if we were doing like a 5x4 at 70% with Shaco, that's now become a 10x2 and they need to finish it within 20 minutes or something like that. And all those reps should be fast and technical. So this beats them up more than the max effort is, because the volume's a lot in a short amount of time, but it, you know, the density of work is there. But it just allows for some good quality, fast technical reps, less bar weight. You get a little psychological deload from the weight. You know, one of the things that I had noticed is we can pretty much go pretty fucking hard for about 6 straight months. Like, I've talked about fatigue and stuff on the podcast and written about it on the blog and stuff, but it seems like there's an accumulated effect that happens with fatigue. It's not necessarily like, ooh, in the fourth week of a training block, you're going to be tired. It's on average, most of, and again, I train beginners to intermediates. The absolute weights are not, I mean, they're, some of them are pretty strong. I mean, I want to say, you know, the majority of our lifters, let's see, if we have about 30% of them have national qualifying totals. So they're relatively strong. It's not like we're not moving decent weights. We're moving decent weights, but it's not like they're not moving those absolute weights like certain elite lifters are moving. So their ability to recover is probably a little bit better. So if somebody was more elite, right, we're talking like a national champ type of lifter, they're probably not getting 6 straight months of doing something like that. It's probably going to be a little bit less. But then, you know, after that, you just start to see some nagging things just start popping up. And, you know, I love the group that I have because they love to compete. So we need to get this under wraps, too. So a lot of the people competing at nationals have competed 3 or 4 times now in a calendar year. So what we need to do is we need to kind of get that squared away. They can't be competing every 3 months because I think what happens is, well, first, like, I'll have a lifter and they're like, oh, I'm going to do this meet. They post on their story. Next thing I know, 20 people are like, let's fucking go. Let's do it. And it's like, calm down. You just competed fucking 3 months ago. But, you know, with the psychological pressures of having a competition coming up, and I think, you know, beginners and intermediates are worse at this than elite lifters, is they just don't understand the, like, bigger picture. It's just like they live their life 12 weeks at a time. And they put so much pressure to make sure that they PR their lifts at every competition. One of the rules that we're going to actually bring into starting next calendar year or whatever is they're only allowed to compete once every 4 to 6 months. If they take a competition within that time period, they're not allowed to take any more than 90 to 95% as third attempts. It's going to be an easy meet. That's something that, like, Chico would do with his lifters when they were competing at higher frequency. So his beginners would compete 4 to 6 times a year, but they would take 90% as third attempts. It was just to get used to the competition scenarios. So I'm willing to do something like that if they're willing to do something like that. But in this, like, this age of social media and everybody wanting to post PRs and all of these things, it becomes extremely difficult. And most people just don't want to pay that money to take 90 to 95% on the platform, even if it would improve their skill at competing over time. But we'll see how that goes. But going every 4 to 6 months limits your competitions to 2 to 3 per year. Now, of course, if, like, there are 2 big competitions within that time period, that's a different story, and we would manipulate what we need to at the given times. So moving more towards, like, a conjugate influence type of program, but we're still keeping our, like, our the technique being important. A lot of the Shaco stuff is still like within our programs. But it allows us to spend less time in the gym, and our totals are moving. They're obviously going up. I mean, we were training hard 3-4 times a week. So I think during those periods of time, the totals are going to increase a lot more than they may now. But over the long run, people stay a little bit less banged up. I mean, the people who are competing 3+ times, you know, I had a group compete April regionals and then nationals, or there's a meet 2 weeks before nationals that we're doing as well. So I've had the majority of people compete like that, April, July, October. It's too much. They tend to have some nagging things that kind of pop up. And part of it's because of the psychological pressures to do better, especially with, like, the tailing up of meets. So, like, April was a local meet. Then you had regionals, and now you have nationals. So there's just a little bit more pressure for each one, and people trying to push it a little more. So we'll navigate that a little bit better in the future. But having those lighter days in, it just, like, you just – I realize we just can't push it like that forever, because people just get beat up, they get drained, they get tired. And don't get me wrong, I do still believe that there is a lot of benefits to training in a fatigued state, but not when we're 2 or 3 weeks out from a competition. So we had to have a lot of impromptu, like, deloads throughout this block with a lot of people competing. And like I said, they've competed a lot. We've been training hard for a long period of time. So anything that I've said about fatigue, it does exist. It's not that it doesn't. And, like, what I was witnessing and what I was observing at those given times was not incorrect. And I like being able to do, like, the podcast and the vlogs as I'm witnessing things, because you can see things play out. You know, so now that we've been doing that for a period of time, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, like, once you throw a time component onto it, yeah, those things might not exist in the short term, but in the longer term, they do become an issue at a given time. So then I started adding up hard sessions. So on average, when people started feeling a little dinged up, it was about 6 months. So that turned out to be like 96 training days. And there were some light ones thrown in there too. So like on average, I think most people in that period of time like trained hard for like 80 to 85 training days. But if we do, so I'm just going to use a West Side template. We do it very different, but just for simple math. So if they're getting 80 to 85 hard training days, if we do, and this is including all the lifts, I didn't break up the lifts because 50% of our volume is bench, 50% is deadlifts plus squats. So you have upper, lower, 50% splits. So with West Side, they have a max effort lower, max effort upper. So same like 50-50 split. So if they get a max effort lower and a max effort upper in the same week, so that'd be two exposures per week, that's 104 right there. So that's already 20 more than what we were getting. Now, granted, we got ours in a shorter time period, but you know, you had the lighter days in there, and then you have to just chill out for a period of time, right? So over the course of a year, I think you're just, if you're not 100%, you're trying to hit those, and not 100%, right? But there's going to be a breaking point where, let's say it's 90%. If you go into the gym and you're less than 90%, those max effort days are probably going to suffer quite a bit. And like out of those harder training days before, out of those 85 training sessions, how many of them were you actually feeling good enough to get the most out of each of those training days? Now, again, I do think that there are benefits to training in a fatigue state, and I think this has prepared us extremely well to, you know, it's built a big base regardless. Like, I have constant communication with my lifters, so nobody's getting fucking destroyed. You know, we're intervening when we need to, making decisions, and, you know, but at some point, everybody's got to run just a lighter block, so you're getting away from heavier weights for a period of time, and that's probably not the most ideal thing, because then there's a rebuilding up process. So the way that we're doing it, and kind of what I realized too, is so we would squat and bench on day one and then bench and deadlift on day two, but over this same time period, and it was different for everybody, but it started to like creep in with everybody. It was just the bigger lifters that lifted more absolute weights, it happened earlier with, and then the lighter ones it would happen later with. But we ended up needing to space out squat and deadlift exposure. So we would be doing max effort for both. And like for me personally, like since I started working with Hartman, I'll squat on Monday and then deadlift on Thursday. And like, there's no fucking way. I mean, I've had to do it because of certain scheduling conflicts and stuff where like I would have to go in and pull on a Wednesday. And like that extra day in between those two makes a huge difference. So a lot of the other lifters, I had to start pushing the deadlifts out into day three. So they would squat and bench on day one, lots of bench day two, and then day three, maybe some light bench. Some did some light squats, like whatever it was. Then they would do their deadlift. So there were differences with all of that. But we're going to move to a more steady dose of that stuff. And what I have been noticing too is, and of course, this just comes with time and building it up, but the speed days. So when we do the higher volume work, the 8, 10, 12 doubles or whatever we're doing, maybe there's some speed deadlifts thrown in after, the lifters get really sore. And if they're doing this on their day four, let's say, but they're doing their day four on a weekend, Saturday or Sunday, and they have to do their day one on a Monday, it's too close. There's just not enough time for recovery. So we may have to tweak that a little bit so that the max effort days don't get completely ruined. So in some cases, what I was doing is I was cutting the volume in half. And this is what I did leading into. So this week, for all of those competing at nationals, it's their last, their second or third week using the accommodating resistance for the majority of them. And then their speed work, I put on day three, cut the volume in half, gave them day four as a rest day. So going into singles next week, they should have a little bit extra recovery going into that. Now, Emily and Sarah, I decided to try something a little bit different with. So Sarah just seemed to always have these like little nagging things. And I think there's some benefit to just to not having a lot of time in between exposures sometimes, to just keep moving. And it tends to kind of help some of those nagging things go away. And Emily had some life things go up. So training kind of moved to the back seat as we went into regional. So she took kind of a hit on her total there. But I think in the giant like scheme of everything, I think lifting, taking a back seat for a period of time for her with how hard she's been pushing and competing to try to qualify for nationals, I think it couldn't have worked out better. But we needed to get her back to where she was so that, you know, we can at least have the opportunity to hit some PRs, on that national platform. So both of them, they did SBD days 4 times a week. So these were controlled, so they weren't like, you know, max out. I would pick a number. It was about an RPE 9, 9.5, but definitely some, leaving some room. And we used variations and stuff like that too. So we ran that for a period of time, and it did seem to help Sarah's nagging things that were going on. I think like the constant movement, just, you know, just helped quite a bit. And it really helped Emily's numbers come back. So Emily had been touching, so like I said, I was picking a number, and I think her best meat squat is 303, and she's been hitting 305 consistently in the gym every week. So there's a big PR there on the squat. Her bench had taken a huge hit, but she's back to hitting her previous third, her best ever comp third in the gym very consistently. So I think we got a PR there. And her deadlift too. So her deadlift didn't take a huge hit going into regionals, but it seems to have caught back up, so to speak. So this worked really well. The problem is you can only do this for a short, and this is 100% what I had assumed, that you can only do something like this for a very short amount of time. So we were able to do it. I think we did it for like 4 weeks. I'd have to go back and count. And then I had to give both of them a deload because they were starting to get tired. Like nothing, no injuries or anything like that, but they were just starting to get tired. So, I mean, the timing literally couldn't have worked out any better for this. So they had a deload week last week. I gave them a more structured program, like I was just explaining, where it kind of spaced everything out, so no more SBD days. This week, they'll get a little quick, little mini taper at the end of the week and then into their singles and on the same schedule as everybody else. So that's kind of cool. How that worked out. So it's just, that's just something, you know, you can use in a very, like when you're bind, you got to try something to kind of try to push progress a little bit quicker. But just know you have a limited time period with some of that stuff. With Jess Ward, I kind of did. We were a lot more aggressive. So she just has, and even with like school and the stress of school, Jess Ward has a superhero recovery ability. Like she could do something heavy on day one, come in on day two and pull heavy again, you know, and like, and she's, her absolute weights are, they're very high for her body weight, which I found amazing. So I was like, shit, let's see what we can really fucking push going into nationals. She won her weight class at regionals. She had over 700 IPF points there. So she's probably going to get an invite to the Arnold no matter what. And her total is so much, I mean, 700 IPF points would qualify her for the Pro American. So even just repeating that total gets her an invite to one of the larger stages at the Arnold. So there's not like a lot of pressure to do better. There's no, I mean, of course there's something to be gained from doing better, but there's really, you know, let's just see what we can like really push and like, you know, let's just go for something. Even though she competed in April, she competed at regionals. But even for her, we had to, we realized we had to space out the squats and the deadlifts a little bit because she got a little nagging hip thing. But like the thing is like with these little like nagging things that pop up, you give a quick little deload and then the following week there's a PR there. Like Vicky had the same thing. Like she texted me in a little bit of a panic, like, oh, you know, my hip. And she has a, she has past negative experiences with hip pain from lifting and being so close to her first nationals too, of course. She was a little nervous. So, you know, I had her talk to Mike Amato and, you know, we had a good conversation. She listened to, there's a Barbell Medicine podcast that Mike was on that they talk about like hip things. And she listened to that. She calmed down. We took a deload week, which basically I just did like how I was explaining the speed work. We used boxes and pins on the squats just to manipulate range of motion to where she was comfortable. And then we kept the box for depth the week after. So she wasn't going, you know, lower than that box, which could have, you know, potentially just put her in a tough position for that period of time. She'll be good now, though. But she came back in to a box, and the box was beyond legal depth. Like, it's still it'll get her whites on a national level platform. But she came back and hit 100%. So that 280 squat, that she, her best ever, you know, the week after, to a box. So there's more there. We'll get 285, 290 on a squat. And as a 57, that's a pretty big squat. So for those, I mean, that kind of like wraps up what we were doing for training. And I think I'm going to keep this same like frame of mind. I think we're, you know, we're really pushing things and seeing how things play out. And those, you know, with the group that we have, I think it's just helping me come up with like answers to better structure training so we can continue to get better year to year. Nobody has a national championship at stake this year. You know, of course, Doug, if he has a perfect day, has a chance to qualify for the Arnold. Dave should be pretty close to an Arnold qualifying total, but he can't go this year because he get into the Fire Academy, so he's going to do that. So big life things happening. Kerry will be pretty close, and Jess will qualify. So, you know, the fact that half of our lifters going to nationals are going to be pretty close to an Arnold qualifying total is pretty fucking cool, too. So each lifter. So day one, Doug. This will be Doug's first year in the Open. He was a junior last year, finished in the top 10. And he's put, I mean, he's a 66. I think his best gym squat right now is around 460. His bench is moving. He's hit some deadlift PRs. So he's looking to put a nice total PR on the platform. I think his best comp squat's like 418. So just in the squat alone, he's going to put about 15 kilos. You know, we should have 2.5 to 5 kilos on that bench. And he's hit 515 or 520 or something on a deadlift in the gym. And I think his best is 507. But he took 455 off 2-inch deficits into minis last week. Pretty solid, too, on that deadlift. So there's probably a little bit more there. But we'll see. But even if he benches the same and deadlifts the same as he did, there's a 15-kilo total PR just because of the squat alone. So that's pretty cool. Day two is Kerry. I think, you know, there's a couple things. Like, Kerry, I want to see her be able to finish a meet. So, like, to have the conditioning and the energy to hit that third deadlift, I think will be a good thing to see. Even if we're a little bit more conservative with the deadlift, but to go out there and just, you know, she's got a chance to PR all of her lifts, her to beat her best competition lifts. So she can get, you know, a nice little 7.5, 10 kilo total PR. And there's some things that we kind of discussed moving forward, because, you know, I do think staying in the 52s is limiting her performance a little bit. Like, if she could eat up, get a little more jacked, touch some bigger weights for a period of time, compete as a 57 a little bit, and then once those numbers are up, maybe we talk about cutting back down to 52 again to be more competitive or one of those things. But of course, it's up to her, so we'll see. So then day three, Friday, Vicky. So this will be Vicky's first nationals. She's a 57. Actually, she's looking at PRs on all her lifts too. I think she had competed in April, so we've already hit PRs, I think, in all three lifts. So it's just a matter of putting them on the platform, which is tough when you're traveling for the first time. And she cuts a little bit of weight, but nothing crazy. Like, she's probably actually sitting at 57 kilos right now, so it's not really a big deal. But, you know, the nerves of your first nationals is a little bit bigger. The judging is a little stricter. But as long as she handles everything well, there's no reason why I think she won't. So nice little total PR there. Day four. So this is when I'm going to be busy on day four. So Sarah had started with me a little over a year ago. And when she competed in her first meet with me, like, she put so much on her total, and like, I was looking at the qualifying totals and I was like, holy shit. I was like, Sarah, just so you know, you're like 20 kilos away. I was like, it's a lot. May not happen this is April of this year. May not happen this year, but, you know, something to think about for maybe 2020. And she got back into training, and like, the lift started like just continuing to move. Like, there was just like this nonstop upward trend of her lifts. And I was like, holy shit, she's getting close. And so she had signed up for regionals, and I'm looking at her her lifts to come up with a game plan, like for openers, seconds, and thirds at regionals for her attempts. And I'm adding them up, and I'm like, holy shit, if she hits this squat, like, she had hit 315 in the gym, and the depth was a little dicey, but it was a big enough squat. And I was like, if she can hit 308, she absolutely has a better than not chance of qualifying for nationals. So at regionals, the second squat moved well, and I was like, fuck, I'm going to put that 308 on the bar. The only thing that's going to hold her back is if she gets reds for depth. And she got two whites. It was close, but, I mean, it's a good lift. And once she got that, I was like, holy shit, she's probably going to qualify for nationals. We dropped the bench a little bit and put those extra kilos on the deadlift, but she ended up doing something a lot faster than I would have expected her to do. So the goal going in for her is more just, let's just get a total at nationals. Like, she's put so much on her total in such a short amount of time. There's a lot. I think it's going to be very tough to try to put more on top of it. So it's just about going out, competing, seeing what nationals is like, having fun. And the PRs will be there at some point. I mean, the amount of weight she's put on her total, I'd have to go back and look, but I think it was like 100 kilos in a year. So it was a lot. So to try to squeak out more is going to be very difficult. But even if we can just get that same total that she had at regionals on the board at nationals, that'd be pretty cool. And Emily's goal is kind of the same thing. Have put her best lifts, her three best lifts that she's done at competition on the platform at nationals. But I think, you know, maybe the bench stays the same, because that can always be a little bit dicey on meet day or whatever. But I think there's a squat PR there, and we'll see with the deadlift. So, you know, even if she gets the same lifts but chips a squat or something, there's a little total PR. And I think doing that at your first nationals, that's a pretty cool thing. Jess Ward has been crushing weights in the gym. She took her best comp deadlift is 402. She took 395 off of a deficit. So we definitely have more there on the deadlift. She's been, so we did a lot of overload squat work. She had 2 weeks of chains, 1 week of bands. So she's been locking out 400 pounds at the top for 3 or 4 weeks now. So hopefully without we remove the accommodating resistance. Her best meat squat's 363. She's already hit 370 before all of the accommodating resistance stuff. So hopefully we get even a little bit more. Not that this like directly correlates, but I had somebody using the same band tension who's a similar height to Jess in the gym that took 305 with the 100, 110 pounds of bands. And ended up squatting 380. So Jess took 295 with the same band tension. So 370, 375, I think is 100% there. And maybe we can squeak out a little bit more, because that 380 for that lifter wasn't necessarily the grindiest of squats either. So there was probably a little bit more there. So we'll see how that correlates with her. They're two different people. Saturday afternoon, we have Alyssa. So this will be Alyssa's second nationals. I'm trying to, I think we missed 330 at regionals on a squat. I'm doing all of these numbers by memory. So I think that they're right. But she's taken more than that off of pins on the squats in this block. Her bench is just, I think her best bench is like 202, but she's been taking 195 at like an RPE 8 on like comp single days. So I think we definitely got more in the bench there. So even if we chip a squat, chip a bench, and I mean her deadlift, she took 10 pounds less than her best ever meet deadlift into minis for a single already in this block. So I think she has a better than not chance of PRing all three lifts on the platform for a nice little total PR at Nationals, which is pretty cool because she's competed quite a bit. But the way that we had set up, because she competed the week before Nationals, so we were very conservative with her attempts. And being so conservative, I think, just kind of kept her a little bit healthier in training. Not healthier, but fresher in training. And she was able to kind of gain some good momentum moving forward. So that'll be good to see. And then Sunday, the last one we have is Dave. So Dave competed in April, but he competed at body weight of like 265 or something like that. Like he gained some weight. He was uncomfortable at that weight and just felt better, a little bit lighter. So he's still going to compete as a 120, but he's competing at around like 250 pounds as opposed. So he's 15 pounds lighter than his last competition. Our goal is to at least match what he had hit at the heavier body weight. If not beat it a little bit, I think there might be a little bit more there in the squat. I think his best squat's 666. So I think we can, I don't know. I think there's like 5 kilos there, if I had a guess. His best bench is like 330, but he's been hitting 325 pretty consistently for singles with a medium grip. So once we move that out a little bit, there's a bench PR. When he's in a more comfortable, stronger position. And then his deadlift. So his deadlift's been going pretty well. He's been locking out consistently over his best meet pull 705. He's been locking out between 725, 735 for the last few weeks. And the other thing with the deadlift that I didn't kind of mention before is it seems like you get 2 solid weeks of a deadlift before you get, you know, something that ends up coming back down to earth and like a lighter day. So I'm going to start incorporating every third week. We're just going to do speed pulls just to kind of get ahead of that. And this was pretty consistent across the board. And like the way that we'll set up the squats is week one, they're going to be a little bit more conservative, leaving 5 or 10 pounds. Week two, they'll take, you know, they'll chip what they did the week before, you know, adding that 5 to 10 pounds. Week three, they're going to go full fucking ham. And really try to push those squats. I think that's a good time to really pull back the deadlifts is on that third week anyways, for that reason. But we'll see. We'll see moving forward. So Dave, actually, I gave him a lighter week last week, lighter week on the deadlifts this week, just doing some like fast speed stuff to make sure that we're really recovered and we can really like push something next week. So the goal is to just chip all of those best competition lifts and then go put it on the platform. So everyone's in a really good position to hit some PRs. Like I was talking about Sarah maintaining, like hitting her total from regionals at nationals, but she's already PR'd a squat. She was using 4-inch deficits. Her best meat pull is like 350, and she was taking 330 plus for singles on those. So there's and then she was tired on those days. Like this was towards the end of the week. So there's probably PRs to be had there too. So everybody going in has a really good opportunity to PR some lifts, PR some totals. Every single person has an opportunity to PR a total going into nationals. And with how often we've competed and how hard we've trained and how hard we've pushed it to be in a position that we're in now to do that, it's pretty cool. You know, and each year it just gets a little bit better with these things. Like we just learn a little bit more, we make some adjustments, and you know, we're always willing to try things, and sometimes things don't work out, but we've never been in a position, and again, I'm grateful I have beginners and intermediates, because we've never been in a position where it really has set somebody back. You know, a lift might stall out here and there, but like, we've done a pretty good job of moving progress forward each and every year, so. I mean, it'd be great to go in there, go 8-for-8 for total PRs, head to Chicago, watch the Pats win a game on Monday Night Football in a Pats bar in Chicago, and then go from there. We'll do a little recap when all this is said and done, too, so that we can kind of bring everything together, you know, and go from there. And so next year, I think for the first time since I first started, we're going to have like almost like a set structure to our programs where now, you know, I was kind of, some people are doing it one way, some are doing it another, and it's just kind of like, you know, I talk about like self-organizing, letting things kind of work out on their own and stuff like that. But like even doing that, there's just so many trends that end up like, that you end up recognizing in these things that you're able to kind of put together a decent plan. And of course, there are going to be times where things stall out. They're going to have to manipulate some variables. But having messed with some of these like different ways of doing things, I know like I could run those SPD singles days 3-4 times a week for a 3 or 4 week block just to change up the stimulus a little bit if I needed to. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse to be part of this group because you're going to be a guinea pig for stuff. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But again, like all those programs that you see out there are written for top-end athletes. Most top-end athletes don't have jobs, or they work in a gym, or they're making sacrifices that the majority of people that are participating in this sport do not want to make. Like most people want to still have a social life. They want to have a few beers here and there. So like there are things that are going to negatively affect their recovery that just disallow them from doing certain things. So finding a way to maximize the amount of time in the gym while allowing them to recover so progress can move forward and they can be competitive with some of the other ones is difficult, but I think it's extremely important. And, you know, at the end of the day, we do have some advantages. We train as a team. There aren't many of those around. Everything's done online. Most people train by themselves. Most people train at RP sevens all the time. So I think there are many things that we're capable of taking advantage of that gives us a little bit of a competitive edge. So we'll see. But I'm sure I'll post meet updates. We have one this weekend. It's like 8 or 9 people, maybe even more, competing this weekend. Should be fun. And then nationals. So until then, you can follow all this stuff on Instagram. It's KWK and our team, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.